Guru Nation, welcome to episode 796 of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. In this episode, we interview Abraham Arzola, and he's a super inspiring site owner. He's in his early 20s. He's the founder of El Paso Clinical Trials. He's actually been a client of me and Chris's for a while with DSCS, Sweat Equity and Investments, where we help sites get studies, do their budgets, help with SOPs, source, whatever they need help with. And this is an inspiring interview. And actually, Chris joined me as well during the interview. So we tried to unpack a lot of Abraham's thought process when he was just a coordinator before he went out and started his own site. And then also, we get into a lot of what it takes to run a brand new site and building systems and things like that. So, check this out. Check out Abraham's LinkedIn in the show notes. Quick shout out to the two sponsors for the show, Inato. Inato is a place where you get studies for free for sites. You do need therapeutic area expertise as of right now, but if you have it, you can get studies. They're out there. Check it out. Link in the show notes. I'm on it at least one or two times a week. It's an awesome tool. Also, Creo. I can't imagine running my site without Creo. It's got eSource, it's got eReg, it's got eSignatures, it's got eConsent, it's got a CTMS, it's got an invoicing feature. It has so many cool things, and they're always thinking of new ways to improve the product. And you only pay for what you use, so you can grow into it. I still haven't used all of it. I think my site, we still have yet to use the payment option where you can pay patients with a card, reloadable debit card. We haven't got into that yet, but I can't imagine it'll take too long before we actually will. So Creo's awesome. I've been using it for a while now. Check it out in the show notes. With all that being said, enjoy the show with Abraham. It was a good one. Bye-bye. Guru Nation, welcome back to another episode of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. What an episode. We've got someone who's a client of myself and Chris, and then Chris is going to show up fashionably late to this podcast. But we have a special guest because it's one of our clients of DSCS. It's a SOS attendee, like enthusiast, Abraham Arzola. He is the founder and site director at El Paso Clinical Trials, which he's been running since January of 2022. And he just graduated from the University of Texas, El Paso, UTEP, in May of 2020. So, I mean, this is someone who started a site almost fresh out of college. And you're such an inspiration to so many people, man. Like, I got thrown into it by accident after college, but it's because my dad, had the hookup. He's like, I wanted to go to med school. And he said, hey, come intern at this site that I'm one of like five doctors. And because that's the only way you're getting in med school with your grades, we do research. I was like, okay. And then 2 months in, everyone started leaving. The business manager was stealing.
Oh man.
My dad said, hey, you need to go get a real job or like take over if you want because no one wants this. It's liability. And you have to put your own money into it now because payroll, nobody made payroll. The employees quit.
Oh
And
man.
I'm like, okay, let's like, I guess I'll do it. We had two existing studies and they had me. I didn't do nothing. They had me just buy dry ice and McDonald's for patients. Like, that's the extent of my knowledge of research. So that's how I got started early. But I want to know how you got started so early.
Yeah, no, because so primarily the way it worked out is in undergrad, at UTEP, the University of Texas at El Paso, I was heavily involved in academic research. I was on a research scholarship. I was in a neuroscience lab there, and day in and day out, we would focus on, neuroscience, just academic side of research. So, the basic sciences, more bench work and stuff like that. And, our focus was Alzheimer's disease and other dementias and trying to correlate, specific animal model to see if it could lead to discoveries in humans. But again, we were on the basic side of things. And so, but I've always loved research. I've always loved the technical aspect, the science, the discovery aspect of it all. And then, you know, I had a, you know, my time at the NIH, National Institutes of Health, that's when I really got, you know, more exposure to the clinical research aspect of it. You know, I saw teams of, and again, I wasn't at the NIH, I wasn't involved in the clinical research side of it. I was both, you know, looking at, well, really just looking at teams of physicians and coordinators running around the place and trying to handle patients and talking, you know, jargon filled, you know, scientific discoveries. And really at their goals were to not only like better understand disease states, but also incorporating new like therapeutic methods to see if they could discover stuff. And so that's really when I got my first look at clinical research and I was just like, wow, like that's not in El Paso. You know what I mean? Like we have nothing like that there. Or at least
so you're
nothing.
An entrepreneur. So first of all, shout out to AMCs. I know I like bash them a lot on this channel. That's not the intent. Yes. This is an example of it doing its purpose, like helping a student open his eyes
yeah.
to research. And then it was the right kind of student because there's no way you're doing that and thinking, why is there no site in El Paso without having entrepreneur blood in you?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't know why. And again, it was really just like seeing that and just saying like, why don't we have that here? You know what I mean? And so after my time at the NIH, you know, I was here back in El Paso. And again, obviously after the pandemic and everything. And so I was like, well, how can we get this started? You know, like how can we actually do clinical research on a, you know, more patient oriented scale? And again, that's always like what we all use is that focus of patient orientation. That's where it has to be, right? Because at the end of the day, patients are you and me, and we could be in studies, you know what I mean? And so I always think of it like if my family member was joining a study, like how would I want them to be treated? You know what right. I mean? And so that's kind of like our ethos, our, you know, our values. And so, you know, so that's when, you know, I contacted you guys and I was like, hey, what's the feasibility of actually doing a clinical research and getting
this? Wait, so you contacted, and shout out to Chris for waking up early for this. Chris, round of
Mr.
applause.
Mr. Abraham, how's it going?
Hey Chris,
amazing.
Good.
That you're joining us. You're special, Abraham. Chris doesn't join early podcasts for anyone.
That's right.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks.
So you thought to hire me and Chris, an archive, shameless plug, DSCS. We help sites get studies, do their budgets, all kind of stuff. Before you had like a PI or anything in mind, you just called us exploratory call?
Well, before I even called you, like I was doing my back end research of like clinical research, right? You do Google, you Google search clinical research. How, and then you see all the like a CRO sponsors and you're like, okay, how to start a CRO. And then it's like, oh, well, CRO is really big. You would want to start out at a site level. And of course, anytime you look up how to, you know, make a clinical research site, the Guru Nation pops up as the first click. And so yes. I was like, oh, okay. So I clicked the link and I don't know, like, and again, I first thought of this in December. And so like of 2021 and yeah, like a whole month of just watching your videos, really doing some deep end research, looking at your 3-hour, you know, guidelines of like, okay, this is the first step. Here's your next step. This is what you do. And I was like, okay, that's great information, you know? And so I said, okay, well, let me talk to some, you know, physicians I know and just kind of go around in the area. Cause, and again, you even said it, like not every physician wants to do clinical research, okay. Which is exactly the case. Like some you'll call their office and they say, clinical research? No, immediately no. And it's just like, oh, like, would they want to know what, like more information? And it's like, no, thank you. And I'm pretty sure that's because physicians get burned either by the medical school here or by Texas Tech here in El Paso based right. with their contributions, you know? And so they have like a bad perspective. And so thankfully we did find a physician who was interested and willing to, you know, work with us. Cause again, like I really didn't have that experience.
How did you know
yet.
That one? How did you find that one?
It was really through one of my friends, you know, one of my friends, he was basically the clinic manager for the physician. And okay. he was able to say like, hey, you know, he's worth giving a shot, you know, because he
this
knew
is
me
where
personally.
I talk like your sphere of influence, guys. Your sphere of influence is powerful.
Yeah.
Like there's no magic way. Let's run ads until a doctor responds. Okay, that could work. But what's more likely to work is your sphere of influence. Tap into them.
Your network.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so thankfully, it wasn't really too long of a process to find that initial physician, right? And from there, once he was like, yep, let's do it. Let's go ahead and do whatever it takes to start clinical research and get studies. I was like, okay. And that's when I reached out to you guys and, you know, our introductory meet, you know, phone call and talk. It was just like, this sounds exactly like what I need, right? Because you guys have all the years of experience and I just need, again, I'm in the absorbing phase. Even to this day, I still need just learning absorbing as much as I can so I can execute it effectively on our site's behalf, right? And so that's where you guys have been beyond phenomenal. Like that every time you have a guest that uses DSCS on your guys' podcast and discussions, like, they're not lying. You know, like, you guys help us immensely, not only finding studies, right? Because our first study was with your guys' help, but also making sure we get a fair budget, right? And that's primarily Chris right there on the budget side.
Chris, a budget master.
Yeah.
This dude sipping that coffee, like, he knows it too.
That wasn't the reason. I'm still trying to wake up. But okay, I'll take it.
Yeah, no. Like, Chris, like, any questions I have, Chris, and he's
Abraham,
quick about it.
I haven't touched a budget in like 10 years. Yeah. I don't even know what they are. I'm like, Chris likes it, it's good.
Yeah, nice. You see, like, I still try to, you know, look around and see what, you know, industry standards are for certain prices and kind of getting a better head of myself. But now Chris has been awesome. Like, and then he'll talk to me. He's like, hey, you know, truly fair is this number, but, you know, it's going to be hard to get this. Like, what are you willing to work with? And that's just awesome because he's so communicative and responsive and he knows what he's doing. So it's been awesome for the most part. You know? So.
Abraham,
Abraham. Glad you're happy.
Dude, so many people are happy. Like, Chris, the negotiating of the budgets. I mean, I don't like that aspect. I never did. I like to build. I like to train staff. I like to get studies. I like to recruit doctors. I like to recruit patients even. I even like to do like QA to make sure things are going smooth for a little bit. Yeah. Budgets is like my least favorite thing. When I see those Excels and those Word, like with all this legal stuff, I mean, I know how to do it, but I'd much rather Chris do it the right way. And that's what all of our clients get too. But the first PI, so did you actually end up partnering with them or was it a contractor?
No, it was a contractor and it still is to this day, you know, because
congrats.
They're still like making sure this is something that's actually going to blossom into something that's really worth everyone's time, you know. And so
have they expressed interest and like, hey man,
it's not like, hey, let me be a partner now, you know. It's more like, hey, you know, our plans, like, this could be something really good. Like, maybe we could even think about buying land in the future and building our own research facility. And it's like, you know, and obviously that's more of a partnership, you know, perspective. So but again, we have to work towards that to really make it successful in the meantime so our future is secured, you know. So
was it a younger guy or
not really, not like fresh out of, you know, residency or internship, you know? He's been in the game for middle age. I would say he's been in the game for a minute, you know, and he has his own clinical practices, you know what I mean? Like, he's not associated, or I guess he doesn't work primarily for some hospital or some, you know, medical center. He's a standalone, you know, site physician.
The perfect one. Ours is slightly different at YCT. They're all in their 60s, mid-60s, so nearing retirement age, which could be good or bad. And Chris, I actually talked to the main one yesterday, internal medicine, and I asked him, you know, what are his thoughts, and he said as he gets closer to retirement, he'll have more time for research.
Wow.
So when it comes to, like, selling, because we have to, because of retirement age, it's not the case. It might actually be an asset.
Yeah.
To have him nearing retirement, because he has the other providers working underneath him that will still funnel the patients in.
Gives him a reason to come to his site and just check on everything, and but he's not obligated. He's not seeing patients.
Good. All you VCs trying to negotiate, play bully ball, it ain't gonna work. I'll tell you right now, in 2024, that ain't working. But you're Abraham. It gets so much easier as you get older, man. Like, you're in your 20s. I remember those days. I didn't know a thing. We didn't have videos. We had Center Watch. We had to learn from like monitors. Ones.
I don't think they're around anymore, right? Center Watch? They're
Center
gone.
Watch around. They're bought by some IRB or something.
Okay. Are you familiar with
like how to be safe?
Yeah. Are you familiar with Center Watch, Abraham?
Yeah. I'm actually seen them pop up around, but you know, definitely not worth our primary research. Yeah. So.
They used to regurgitate GCP or FDA regulations in a book for like $300.
Big book, though. It was like this thick.
Oh, impressive as hell. If you don't know what you're doing, you're scared as shit. Like, I need to read this thing. But
yeah,
no, you don't. Like, yeah, I think really. The videos, this is why we decided to do the videos too. But it gets easier. Like, doctors in the future, like as you branch out to specialists, it gets easier with age for you. Because, and the more you do it, you know, they can smell it like right away. Okay, this guy knows what he's doing. Because I remember when I started, that wasn't the case. But today, it's like within minutes, they're like, okay, let's do it. And if they ever try to like counter with like yesterday, one guy tried to counter with more. I'm like, I can go this much more, but anything more than that's not worth it. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, no, it's okay.
Yeah.
So it gets easier. You get the upper hand at some point. So how long did it take to the first study you got? Like, was it a good one? Most people's first study is not very good.
Ours was actually pretty good. You know, it wasn't, I mean, there was a lot of logistics to figure out on the back end for us. But for the most part, it was actually a really nice introduction to research in general for both me and the PI, right? It wasn't too complicated. It wasn't that much of a headache to like, hey, we have this AE that we have to fix or understand and report. You know, it was, for the most part, it was really straightforward for us. And so it was our first study was a great experience, you know? So I know it's not always going to go that way, but, you know, thankfully it helped me learn very quickly too. Cause again, for that first study, I was the coordinator and, you know, I plan on being the coordinator for many foreseeable studies until we're like too big to do it all, right?
So you're doing it all right now.
Doing it all, yeah. We have one other coordinator right now that's actually helping with our new study that we just got. But yeah, for the most part,
so first employee was there.
Yeah,
first employee?
Yeah.
When first did employee. You hire them? Like they in got, the process?
Literally, like at the end of the first study, like they weren't even involved in the first day. They've only been hired since February of this year, you know? So
you did everything Chris and I tell people to save. If you can do it yourself, do it yourself. If you don't need to lease a space, did you lease a space?
No, we were working out of the physician's office.
Everything. You follow the blueprint like to the T,
yeah.
Abraham. You built the foundation and you see like the benefits of that now. Like you, for sure, you have cash flow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that, thankfully, we're not like running negative, thankfully. You know what I mean? Because, again, you can't really do that for too long until it starts really hurting, you know? So we have, you know, we have, as we say, like money in the bank, and we could definitely start investing in our own future and our own growth. And again, like I say, that first study was phenomenal for that. You know what I mean? Like it really helped us out. And not only like understanding, like I said, understanding research, because it's easy to watch a bunch of, you know, your videos and kind of be like, yeah, I get, and even read your book. Like I did all the research I could, you know, I read the book, I have the audio book too. I've looked at every video and I did all the training courses I could find, like online for free, of course, right? Mm-hmm. But once you're actually doing it, it's a little bit different, right? Like, because now you have to really think about how this actually plays into the greater regulations of the FDA and how it actually matters, like for the patient safety. And so it was like little things like of even including like a little checkbox on our source documents that, you know, sometimes you can miss that, but thankfully the monitors help out and it's like, oh, you know, it was good that was only one document. Like you could, that's a protocol deviation, but you know, you could fix that and not reportable. It's a fine, you know? And so figuring all of those things out pretty early on, it like, it kind of gave me a, you know, really good perspective of like, this is how we can go ahead moving forward and do it really well, at least as well as we can, you know, and just keep things good on our behalf, especially when the FDA's eyes, you know what I mean? Cause you know, I always like the principle of like, even when with Brad's, like his FDA audit, like I always like the idea of like, we're always FDA audit ready. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like we're going to have to prepare over the weekend. It's like, they give us a call. We're ready to go. You know, like all of our things are taken care of as best as possible. Right. Cause nothing's ever perfect, but
that's cause you're doing it right now.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So the next step, if you want to scale, is to build a system to where others are doing it also. But I think because of your, like, you're so young and kind of new, it's beneficial to you and your future system that you're doing it all.
Yeah.
Because that's going to give your future hires more respect for you. Like ours, there's nothing I tell any of our staff to do that I haven't done at some point. Nothing. And if there is something new, because things change, I do it too. I'm like, let me see what this actually entails. That way I know when I'm asking someone to do something, it's not like irrational, right?
Yeah, of course.
This is really inspiring, I think, for a lot of people. So this first person you hired, they just started. I mean, what, a month ago?
Yeah, just wow. Yeah, just a month ago, like 2 months, I guess, at this
point. How did
point,
that work? But... like, did you do an Indeed ad, or what did you do?
So the cool thing with this one is the way it works is here in El Paso, we have a nonprofit foundation called the MCA, or the Medical Centers of Americas. And what they do is, again, they're a nonprofit, so they're really involved in not only helping, you know, new research and new ideas or inventions come to market, actually, but they also have a division where they're also trying to help the community with clinical research in itself, right? And so they offer like trainings for not only just like people who are interested in becoming CRCs for clinical research, but also for principal investigators. And they do that all for free on their end. You know, like, they just offer that because that's their goal, is to help boost clinical research in the area. And so early on when we started, like, I learned of them and I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, maybe we could have, like, I'm doing clinical research, I'm trying to start a site. Maybe there's some collaboration we can do with each other. Right. And yeah, they've been great. Like, they do those training programs and they always send us leads, and they always send us like, hey, you know, this individual, they did our training course. And they actually send us a whole list of individuals, actually, like they all did their training course and they're all interested in clinical research. And, you know, if you want, you could reach out to them and you discuss on the back end with them. And that's what we've kind of done. And, you know,
did you filter out a list to get this one person?
Yeah. Cause again, here in El Paso, you know, it's bilingual, you know, a lot of mm-hmm. you know, patients are Hispanic. So obviously the, you know, being bilingual was critical. And I chose someone who really had a science background, because again, like, they could have a medical perspective, like as an MA or, you know, some type of, you know, medical related field, right? But it doesn't necessarily mean they'll take the science seriously. You know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, research, clinical research is science and data collection, right? And so if they've worked in a lab or have been exposed to academic research, at least from my perspective, like, they are able to handle the data really properly. You know what I mean? Like, that data is ultimately the golden goose that you protect. You know what I mean? So that's what I kind of sought for, is somebody who had a background in research. And yeah, this individual, they have their, you know, their degree in biochemistry, and they have that research aspect to them. They even have publications under their name. So that's been great with them too, is like, they know what they're doing.
That comes in handy. Yesterday, I told you I went to my pulmonologist, the last PI we found, and I already got him 2 studies. And in like 2 weeks, I did not expect it. And so I brought 2 coordinators with me, because our sub I couldn't make it for the afternoon. So I just picked at random 2 of our 4 CRCs, but I'm glad I picked the right one. They were the ones with the bachelor's degrees and science background. And to this PI, that actually mattered. Like, to the other ones, it didn't, but to this one, he actually was interviewing them, kind of.
Oh, really?
To vet whether he actually wants to work with us. Because I only had like 2 conversations with this guy prior to this meeting. And then I'm like bringing him 2 studies, like, hey, we got to do this.
Yeah, we're ready to start.
Wait a minute, one of these is a long-term study. I don't know you yet. let me ask you who your staff is. And then they explain, like, thank God it was the ones with the bachelor's degrees. I mean, I think they're all like equally good, but to him, it mattered. I can tell. Yeah. Like, he was impressed by their background. One more question before I let Chris kind of open up, because Chris got his own set of questions.
Well, I don't know if Chris does, but go ahead.
Well, Chris is well caffeinated now, so he might be.
But waking up.
Do you use like any e-source or tools or anything?
Not yet. You know, it's funny thing is, with a lot of the, you know, monitors that have come down, and, you know, they always, you know, that's one of the documents is like, what's your primary, you know, source documentation, and you know, and you check a box, either paper, electronic, or both, right? And I always like to pick their brains, right? That's what I always do, is like, I'll just try to have a conversation, and because they've been in the industry, they're CRAs because they were probably CRCs back in the day, and they've done this a lot, right? And so I've asked a lot of them, and by a lot of them, like 4, right? And it's like, hey, what do you think's at least better for a starting up site and easier in the long run to like really manage and make sure it's, you know, it's compliant and stuff like that. And they're hands down, though, it's like all paper source. It's easier because you have more control over it. And, you know, and I was just like, oh, okay, paper source. All right. And that's what we've been doing. So paper. And again, with eSource, I mean, there's a lot of costs associated with it. And then there's a lot of different vendors. And you know, even at SOS, I've talked to like three different ones. And I was just like, all right, like you guys offer the same stuff, but different prices, but you offer a little bit more. And what are we really looking for? And it's like, is that something that's even feasible, you know, starting up? Like maybe when we have like a bunch of studies concurrently, yeah, it would make sense and staff to manage that. But, you know, with just two coordinators and just like one study right now, like what can we really focus on, you know?
So at the conference, study, yeah. So at the conference, you sided with the paper source side.
Yeah.
Just going to say, you should have brought an expert witness, Abraham, called him to the stage.
Yeah, that was, I'll never get the picture of you in a wig out of my head, Chris, but.
Yeah, that was something. I'm never going to live that down.
But yeah, so paper, at least for the time. And again, I see the benefit to even eSource in terms of, you know, really keeping that trail monitored, you know, and that's really going to come into play. Yeah, the audit trail, and that's going to be really, you know, critical when there's like more team members and you want to make sure like who's doing what. But, you know, right now I have like direct oversight over what's being done and making sure it's done properly. And if not, then there's ways to rectify that with, you know, according to like Alcoa standards and all that. So,
yeah.
So
there's benefits to eSource. There's benefits to paper. I think the benefits to eSource outweigh the cons, but in your situation, you said you only have one study or maybe a couple?
Right now it's just one, yeah.
Doesn't make sense. If you start getting like 5 to 10 and you start building your systems. So here's the thing. Yesterday we had a complicated visit. Nothing was going right for one of our psych studies.
Yeah.
Like the tech wasn't working on their end, the vendor, everything. Like, and the patient was in a hurry. She's like, I only have an hour. Like, I can't stay. So nothing worked well. The visit was half done and it's a direct to EDC study, but we still use Creo to document notes because I'm not comfortable like not having a note.
Yeah.
The thing is, when I got home, that visit wasn't completed in Creo. It was in the Medrio in the EDC.
Yeah.
There was no note or anything explaining the issues going on. So an auditor, like a year from now, if they ever look, they're like, well, why was the visit halfway done?
Yeah.
So I was home, right? And I know the staff was busy. They were at a community outreach event. They were working on making sure the patient's like, okay. Yeah. When I got home, I'm like, hey, why wasn't this done? So I log into Creo. I just did it. It took me 5 minutes. I wrote like a quick note why it's not done. I couldn't have done that with the eSort or with the papers.
So now that kind of raises my curiosity. So I assume you went on EDC to get the data to put into eSource.
I didn't need to because I know what needs to be done at that visit and I know what wasn't done and what was. So it was really just the date and an explanation of why certain things weren't done.
Okay. So you gave an explanation of why vitals weren't captured in eSource. Okay, got it.
Never but mind. My staff is newer. And they were busy and they thought, okay, since it was, you know, the visit's like half done, we put what we needed to do in EDC already. They didn't put a note anywhere. So I did it, took me 5 minutes, but I was at home. And then I took a text picture and sent it to everyone and said, I know it was a dumb, like crazy visit, but you still need a document because one of the C's in Alcoac is contemporaneous. So he can't be writing this tomorrow. So you need to write this today.
Sorry, Abraham. Dan's got me on a tangent now. So
I love this. I should have been on that eSource stage.
When did the FDA flip from EDC will never be the source? When did they flip from that?
I think it was with the risk-based monitoring, GCP revisions. They never like actually
2017?
Yeah, but they never actually flipped. It's just sponsors got more comfortable with it.
So FDA never what's the word, disallowed it, right?
FDA
it
was always said, allowed. FDA never mandate like you need an EDC. They just demand a clinical study report at the end of the trial.
So, if I recall correctly, there was a time when you could not directly enter data in the EDC, right? It had to go through some sort of source document.
Yeah.
But that no longer is the case, is what you're saying.
That's no longer the case when EDCs become like similar to eSource. But the thing with this particular study, we would have not used Creo because I don't want to just spend money I don't have to for that study. And the thing about Creo is you only pay what you use. But I was like, well, there's no place to write notes in here. This is stupid. And the only thing we can do is write a note and upload it somewhere, which is dumb. No one's going to do it. Plus, I won't be able to track the CTMS to see how much money we made or what we're still owed. So I'm still going to pay for Creo for this thing to document and to track expenses and things like that.
So this system you're using for the study, it's an all-in-one, right? It's an eSource and an EDC where it transfers the data.
What the sponsor chose is EDC only.
Oh, interesting. They have an
EREC thing. Theoretically, you could upload your source there.
Okay.
But no one's going to do that. Our site is trained on Creo. No one writes hand notes and scans it. I know they're not going to do that. Like, it's hard enough to get them to write it on Creo, like you saw yesterday. So, right. You know, I had to do it. But without Creo, that wouldn't have been done. I would have had to do it. What, today and backdate it?
Yeah.
And what kind of example are you sending to your staff? Like, no.
Well, you don't have to backdate it. Just this occurred yesterday.
It's just worse. It's worse in my opinion.
Certainly.
Yeah. But so, anyways, back from the Creo commercial.
Yeah, back to Abraham.
Yeah. But,
So I do have actually something that I'm genuinely curious about. So, Abraham, I'm going to start here. Dan. How many feasibility questionnaires would you say you need to fill out to get a site selection visit?
I think it depends on your area that you're at, but like in Yuma, it's less than Orange County.
Mm-hmm. Let's say Orange County, somewhere competitive.
Like seven.
Really? You think it's that many?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
Lately, they've just been sending them, I feel like, and then not following up on them. In Yuma, I think it's like three.
See, that's always been my experience. Even two or three to get a study. But you think it's more like seven in a very competitive area.
From what I recall from like Costa Mesa days when we were there, it was more.
Okay. Well, Abraham, have you had any more success since we spoke? And why I'm asking this is because oftentimes people don't realize they really don't, that you don't know what you don't know, right?
Yeah.
So Abraham and I had a conversation not too long ago about something he was doing that probably was affecting his ability to get studies. And I was just curious if you had any more opportunity to implement what we discussed.
Well, since we last talked, you know, regarding some of the feasibilities and right, it's just been my experience recently that a lot of the times, I guess throughout this whole process is that a lot of the sponsors take a lot of time to kind of get back to you regarding a lot of the steps, right? And so right now we've only filled out one feasibility, like additional since. And, you know, we've signed CDAs, we reviewed protocols, and we're just waiting for getting those feasibility questionnaires, you know what I mean? And so, it's kind of crazy sometimes. It's like, we'll sign the CDA and it's fully executed, and then we don't get a feasibility questionnaire until like a month later. And it's just like, you know, like that's a lot of time that was just kind of wasted, you know, just sitting on it. And then we fill out the feasibility questionnaire, and if we hear back from them, you know what I mean? It's most of the time not for another 3 weeks, 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's just a time consuming process. And so that's kind of where we're at, is like, we filled out that one so far, and we're waiting to hear back. And that was like two weeks ago, or I guess at this point, 3 weeks ago this week. So, and we'll see if we ever hear back. And yeah, like there's a lot of other ones. Like we just filled out the CDA and we're going to fill out the feasibility this coming Monday, you know? And, but yeah, I mean, yeah, initially, yeah, I was having a hard time with, you know, filling out a bunch of feasibilities and, you know, waiting never really hearing any response back and not getting awarded any studies, you know? And it's like you said, it comes down to a lot of the times, like their perspective when, with like advertising, you know, like if you're going to rely on advertising and not like necessarily put some patients in your database, they're probably going to be less inclined to want to award you that study. But, you know, I think really since we implemented, you know, those changes, like we have yet to see, and again, that's really on their end, you know, but we have yet to see if it's really changed anything on that behalf. But hopefully, you know, hopefully those things that we've changed are, we get awarded like each study that we fill up feasibility for, but I'll let you know. I mean, you'll be the first person I let know, right? So,
well, if I recall the numbers correctly, you were filling out something like 3 a month and it had done 15 or so without it getting a study.
Yeah, exactly. It was, and again, I was just thinking like, wow, maybe this is just like hard to get studies. But like you said, in your guys' experience, you know, unless we're, and again, we're not in a competitive area. It's not like it's a, you know, a research site every block, you know, of in our city. Right. You know, it's like there's only a handful of sites here. And yeah, I was just like, I was wondering what I was doing wrong, you know? And so like when we went through it and we kind of like looked at how we were filling it out, you know, we identified some areas where maybe that's going to be the problem area, right? And yeah, like I said, I'll let you know when we see what, if those were the issues, you know what I mean? Or I don't know. I can't imagine we're on some like hidden blacklist, you know? Oh, there we go. Am I there?
Yeah.
I was saying, I can't imagine that we're on some like hidden back end blacklist.
No, you're not. You're not.
I doubt it, but you know, but it was like a lot of feasibility.
Way too early for that for you.
Exactly.
And just to confirm your, analysis of timelines in research, literally this is a true story. I filled out a feasibility one time and it took 2 years for them to schedule the site selection visit.
Wow.
2 years later, I was like, what study is this?
Sometimes like they plant seeds.
They sent an email. Yeah. We'd like to schedule a site selection visit. I'm like, okay, what study is this? Man. I looked it up 2 years ago.
Abraham, have you reached out? You're part of a private practice too. So have you reached out to like sales reps that come?
Yeah, we have. And that has its own successes, you know, and you know, even today we have like a talk with an MSL, you know, with one of the bigger companies.
You haven't?
But no, I have.
Oh, okay.
No, yeah. But like today we have another one today.
Oh,
but,
today. I got you.
Yeah. But that has
planting seeds.
Yeah, that's more planting seeds because, like, nothing's really paid off from talking to, because, like, a lot of times with those site reps, I'm like, oh, hey, you know, we do clinical research studies, and, you know, either the physician mentions it during their meeting or I'm there present, and most of the time they're like, oh, yeah, we'll get you a contact, and then whether or not they follow up, you know, with that contact, it's sometimes we have to chase them, you know, like, hey, give us that lead, give us that the MSL contact, and then when we finally talk to the MSL, they're like, oh, okay, you know, you're doing studies. That's great. We'll get in touch with you. And then, you know, we have yet to hear back, you know, so
right.
Like you said, it's planting seeds. Eventually I'm sure it'll pay off and maybe there's going to be a study that they're going to be like, yeah, we need sites. Oh, we have this site in El Paso that could potentially do it. But, you know, again, to be seen, you know, so we'll have to see.
It's planting seeds. Yeah. We did the obesity studies. We got one of them was from a MSL.
Yeah.
And then the other one came because we were on shared investigator platform because they make you get on that.
Yeah.
So then they found us. And then yesterday that sponsor's sales rep was actually there. Dr. Smith told me to talk to her. I asked her for the MSL. She texted her on the spot. The MSL texted back. Here's my email. Chris, I still have to send you that email for you. Did she get back to you, Chris?
Mm-mm.
I'll send you her email. She's the MSL. And it's just planting seeds, like you said, Abraham.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, hopefully we'll see the fruits of that labor, you know, come to fruition. Right. But another thing we've been doing too, is like with, you know, clinicaltrials.gov. And again, that has its own rewards and, you know, risks to it too. Cause like not all sponsors are the same. Right. But we kind of do our own back end, you know, business development, and we started searching for, you know, sponsors that are actively recruiting or not yet recruiting on clinicaltrials.gov, and we do that outreach, and that's actually been how we've talked to a lot of sponsors and kind of get on their list per se, you know what I mean? So but you know, that's that's just what that is at that point. You know what I mean? Just kind of searching for sponsors. But
yeah, the more databases you're in, the more lists you're on, the better.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it doesn't hurt. And so,
and it's definitely planting seeds, because a lot of times this stuff is not immediate, right? It might be years, because especially with the MSLs, they're gathering information about studies, A, that you can do, and B, that you'd like to do, right?
Yeah.
And they're more interested in what you can do opposed to what you would like to do, right? Yeah. What can you get patients for? But they do take into consideration what you would like to do. Yeah. And it might be 2 years until a study comes along that fits one of those two categories that they're doing, or 5 years. So,
yeah, exactly.
I have spoke with an MSL once in which they said, we have a study now that would be a good fit for you guys, and I'll try and get you guys some information and get you in. Never came to be, but it does happen, right? Most likely the study, because they don't know, they're not directly in the research space.
Yeah.
It probably had all the sites it needed. What happened to my camera?
Yeah, no, you're all blurring.
Yeah, but Dan left and I'm blurry.
Yeah, you're I mean, it's exactly like it's I mean, we'll have to see when it kind of pans out. And again, there's also, like, I've had a lot of studies, you know, come across too. Like, I do get studies that, but they're harder studies, you know what I mean? Or they're for like some specific indication that like we don't have the, you know, the capacity or facilities for, you know what I mean? So, so there's a lot of opportunities that, cause there is a lot of opportunities, just there's never really that good fit, you know, until after a while you have to wait and sit and keep searching for it. And when that good fit comes in, it's going to be worth it. Like I said, with that first study we had, it was, at least from my perspective, it was worth it. You know, it kind of got us off the ground, you know, and made it something that we could actually do and grow. So
you're not into forcing round pegs into square holes or vice versa?
No, there's no reason for that. Cause like, and I always say that, it's just like, it'll just be a bigger headache to just, you know, say yes to everything and then just try to figure it out later. Like, sometimes that'll work out, right? But at least with certain like studies, like, it's not going to work out, you know, it's just going to cause much more of a difficulties at the site level. And then when that good study does come along, our attention will be divided at that point. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so it just wouldn't be something that we could really dedicate time to and make it justifiable, you know? But good. And I say that because there is this one that, like, I was reading the protocol for, and I was just like, wow, like, that's a tough one, you know, like first, where are you even going to find those patients? And second, like, you need so many different team members to really make sure that it's safe for the patient, you know what I mean? And again, like, to invest in that and maybe it works out, it's just not really worth it, you know? So.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there are a lot of studies that require a lot of staff members. So you need, say, six or more staff members. And then additionally, you're lucky if you can get three patients for the study, oftentimes, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I can fully relate. To those that are newer, though, if you can get those two or three patients, I would certainly try and do those studies.
Yeah.
As Abraham's alluding to, it significantly improves your standing in the industry to get that experience. But yeah, I mean, those are the types of studies that mostly new physicians are doing, because sites don't want to deal with this.
Yeah.
You mean I got to run a full house of employees, and I'm at best, if I'm lucky, I can get three patients.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, it just makes it really hard. But like you said, like, to a certain extent, you need experience, you know, going into the industry. Like, that was one of our biggest challenges, is like with our PI, you know, like, he didn't have that prior research experience. So it wasn't only just finding a study that is actually feasible, but it's also finding something, a study that we can actually do to get that experience on paper and show sponsors that, yeah, we are capable and we can run a study and we can enroll for it and we're reliable. You know what I mean? So, you know, that's one of the aspects. But, you know, even now, like, with the rheumatologists that we have on board now, like, they came with a wealth of experience. You know what I mean? Like, it's, they have a lot of studies that they've contributed to and been a part of. And so that just kind of boasts all of us together. It's like, yeah, they have experience and now we can go ahead and do, you know, he can oversee and we can go ahead and provide the services for this new study and enroll patients to an adequate amount. You know what I mean? Cause again, like, sponsors always have their minimum enrollment expectations, you know? And so as long as we hit that number, you know, and hopefully go beyond it, that's what we're kind of going to be able to show them with this, you know, wealth of background research that they come with, you know what I mean? But yeah, that's the trickiest part, is like, especially starting out, like it was hard getting that first study. And again, it wasn't even like we filled out feasibility and it was like, yeah, here you go. It was like, filled out feasibility. They're like, but you don't have experience. And then we had to like tell them like, yeah, well, you don't have research experience, but the PI, he's treated this condition for many years. You know what I mean? He has practical experience as a physician. So, you know, it'll translate to this study. And thankfully they went for it and, you know, it worked out.
Good. So I don't really have any other questions, but I would like to make a statement for everybody who's watching this video. Abraham will be in Oklahoma City next year in April 2025.
Sure?
Yeah, he said he guaranteed you'll be there.
Okay. Yeah, I'll be there.
Are you driving this time too?
No, thank you.
So, yeah. So if you want to say hi to Abraham, make sure come say hi to him. If you're watching this video, it's all a year from now.
This is a rising star in the space. I mean, to have a site so young and already be successful at it, like, it's amazing. What's next for you? Like, what do you think? How do you want to expand, or do you want to expand? What is it you want to do?
So you know, like I told you, my background has been in academic research, right? And so I always have that appreciation for the academic side of things. But at least in the meantime, for the clinical research, you know, aspect of everything, I definitely want to, you know, broaden our partnerships and collaborations in the area to not only like just get more studies, but also to be that center that basically offers that innovation aspect and kind of hope to patients. Because a lot of the patients that call and ask about studies that we have going on, like, you could kind of hear a certain, you know, desperation to them, like looking for new treatment options for their conditions, you know. And I actually had early on I had one person call me looking like basically almost in tears, like asking for studies. And I was just like, you know, so on my end, I went ahead and researched it and looked at the closest one, and the closest one is in Dallas. So like significantly out of her area, you know what I mean? And some patients just don't have the means to make that, you know, commute and stick to it. So at least moving forward, our hope is to not only like grow in terms of just offering more studies, but also collaborating with new physicians so we can target different disease indications and different, you know, with different specialties and just offer more options to patients. And apart from that, hopefully we can kind of branch back into, you know, the academic side of research and also be a part of that discovery process and kind of contribute to, you know, the late, because again, clinical research is the late end of the research, right? But contribute to those early ends and make our impact that way as well, you know?
So I actually lied. I have one more thing to say or ask. So Abraham, did you do much networking at the conference? I'm promoting our conference here too. Did you do much networking there?
Yeah, actually, that's a funny thing you said. Somebody I met with, I just had a call with them yesterday. You know what I mean? Basically sharing study leads and discussing like basically our shared problems, but also our shared plans and strategies so we could both be, you know, successful. And so, yeah, I met a lot of new friends, I would say, you know, like,
awesome.
So it was great. Like I tell you, like, I haven't really jumped around to too many conferences, you know what I mean? But, sure. You know, from what I've heard, especially at the your guys' conferences, like, that's not the norm. You know what I mean? Like, not many people can expect to just have that open dialogue with everybody else. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, sure. You know, if you're really pushy, you can talk to people at other conferences, but at your guys', like at SOS, it was just like, you sit down, it's like, hey, what's up? You know, what are you in? Like, what do you do? And it's like, oh yeah, what do you do? And then boom, now we're friends. You know, like we add each other on LinkedIn and now we have that contact, you know?
So, and unfortunately or fortunately, I don't know whichever way you want to look at it, but at both the pre and post party, I was somewhat well lubricated. So I don't recall, did I introduce you to David?
LaHaye?
No, Martinez. He's in Texas as well. I can't recall if I did or not, but he was able to get one or two studies from our conference.
He's a
site as well. So
there were sponsors there.
Yeah, you got to make sure and talk with the sponsors when you go to our next conference. Just FYI.
CROs.
And hook up with maybe your friend or two that you made at the last conference. You guys could go together. right?
Yeah, and, yeah. Well, that's a plan. Everybody I've talked to, so like that was there, plans on going to the next one. So, I mean, that goes to show you like how everybody thought it was equally beneficial. So,
yeah.
We ain't going nowhere, man. With this SOS is going to continue. People like Abraham are going to be there. We'll be networking more too. I know you're a client of the SCS, but just as like individual site owners. And you were saying you were doing some community outreach recently this week.
Yeah, exactly. Like I saw your video too, and I was just like thinking like, yeah, how can we get to patients without it being getting rid of that barrier of them having to come to us, you know?
Yeah.
And so one thing I saw, and you had mentioned like nail salons, right? Like going to nail salons and, you know,
that maybe went even viral, guys. Yeah. 100,000 views. 100,000 views on Instagram.
What? 100,000 yes. Views go to the nail salon to get a study?
Let me break down what we do. No one's doing this. This is my idea. I take full ownership.
Oh, the marketing. Okay, I got it. Yeah.
Yeah. How do we contact, how do we get patients to know us without being obnoxious?
Yeah.
Hey, we do trials. I mean, they don't even know what that is. So every month, today I'm doing another one with the plumbing company.
Yeah.
We interview a business owner in the town, preferably one I like, I'm a fan of. And or one of our staff, because it's not about me.
Yeah.
The nail salon was our staff. CRC was like, hey, did you know our neighbor is a nail salon owner? And she actually won Yuma's best nail salon. We go, they get their nails done all the time afterward.
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, well, go interview her for the podcast then. Like, I don't need to do anything this month. Kick my feet up. So the two coordinators went. One of them was getting their nails done while the other one, they were all talking during the pod.
Yeah.
So it was like 30 minutes, nothing about research, just about the nails. Nail, what do you do? How do you like this? That got spliced up into like four shorts. One of the shorts, which was like, I think they asked her something about what was the longest set you've ever done. All right. That got 100,000 views on Instagram. So I'll just show a little bit of it here.
I think the longest I've gone was maybe like 5 hours.
Dude,
what kind of set was that?
I'd like to know what
detailed. Yeah, I have one particular client, one client in specific, but she gets like the detailed design every single time. This girl does.
What does she mean by the longest she went was 5 hours? Without getting her nails done?
No, how long was the longest client of hers? Yeah, I know. I don't understand this female talk either. Point is, it doesn't matter what I think. The community voted with their eyeballs.
Yeah.
She's now referring patients to us. We're helping any patient that finishes our study that's wants their nails done, we send to her, we pay for it. Is she herself was curious about studies for family. It works. This stuff works. It's natural grassroots conversation. There's no immediate ROI. I didn't think that would go viral. I would never expect that one to go viral. That's the one that went viral. And we just keep at it. I mean, but that over time builds awareness. And so I think stuff like that, it works. That's been my theory, and now it's starting to turn into proof that it works.
And again, like trying to take a you know, a bit of your advice and kind of play by that playbook you've even set out is like, I've been even reaching out to, you know, our community haircut salons, you know, like
that's dope. You should get a haircut while you interview them.
Yeah,
have your coordinator tape you guys and then just do like a 20-minute conversation.
Exactly. See, like the fact that that's how you've approached it too, like gives me great, like way more ideas to how we can go ahead and, you know, involve the community in what we do. Because again, like here, research is also a little bit stigmatized for patients because a lot of, you know, at least in our Hispanic population, they don't really trust medicine. You know what I mean? And there's, I mean, not only is it a challenge to get them to go to regular doctor's appointments, you know what I mean, that for their health, but to also get them to participate in research that, you know, may or may not directly benefit them. You know what I mean? Like, that's a challenge in itself. And so, yeah, like you, like I said, like going to those haircut salons and talking with the owners and talking to, and I mean, that's where a bunch of conversations happen. So, you know,
a bunch. Next month, hopefully it's batting cages. There's a new batting cage, indoor batting cage in Yuma. So me, a coordinator, which will be Katie, she likes baseball. And then the owner will be mic'd up and we'll be like swinging while talking about baseball.
Baseball, yeah.
And guess what? We're going to splice them up. Hopefully one does really well. And if not, you still have the other day, Inato, one of our sponsors, asked us for proof that we're doing community outreach. They actually asked for links to proof. Everyone says they do. Okay, well, show us.
Yeah.
Here's four of the last podcasts we did. Here you go. They're all minority-owned, you know, because they like the minority stuff. Yeah. This is what we do. And they're like, wow, no one's done that. This is really good.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it can only really help you, you know, at the end of the day, because you get good conversations out of it. You show the community that you're there. You're a person too with them, and you're no different. You're not a scary, you know, research center or anything like that. And
nothing,
you know, and on top of all that, you can show sponsors and even like Inato, you know, some vendors, like we do community outreach and this is our, because that's a part of our values. You know what I mean? Communicating with the community and involving them. So yeah, exactly. So that's kind of what we were doing is with the haircut salons and, you know, nice. Again, minority owned, local owned. So, and that was cool. Like, you know, you can only really talk to cool people at that point. You know what I mean? Like get different perspectives that, you know, we don't see in just our fields of research. You know what I mean? So that was fun. So that's what we were doing on, what was it? Tuesday?
Yeah. Wednesday. Tuesday. Cause I wanted to do this podcast. Then and you were like, no, I'm doing community outreach, like you said. But Abraham, someone that's been following the blueprint, and you're just getting started, man. So thank you so much. Look, everybody, go connect with Abraham. His LinkedIn's underneath. He's a satisfied DSCS client. He's a SOS enthusiast. He's a up and coming site owner. Chris, anything else you want to?
Very add? Nice guy. I very much like Abraham.
Very nice guy. Yeah.
Thanks, Chris.
Yeah. I mean, who wouldn't want to network with Abraham, especially after this pod? So connect with him on LinkedIn. It's in the show notes. It's under the video. Like, subscribe, comment, share. Bye bye.